For Parshas Korach, we have five Divrei Torah, really all focused on the main theme of the Parsha, the rebellion of Korach and his Eidah, his squad cohorts against Moshe Rabbeinu and against the Kahuna Gedolah, saying that Aaron should not be appointed as the Kohen Gadol. In fact, it should be one of us. It should be Korach and the other people who were rebelling together with him. And the Rebbe from Pshischa focuses on this, what we would call nowadays, the power grab, that we have Korach attempting to grab the role of the Kohen Gadol, an unbelievably important, significant role in Klal Yisrael, but he was trying to do it unilaterally, not that other people were acknowledging that he had the proper Kedusha, the proper character traits to become the Kohen Gadol, but rather he himself was unilaterally attempting to grab that position, and the others with them were attempting as well. And the Rebbe from Pshischa says as follows, that when it comes to taking on a role of that significance, it can't be you that decides. It has to come from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Kohen Gadol is not something that should be seized by somebody, but something that has to come from above, and an acknowledgement from above that this is the proper fit. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to jump forward in building out what's the concept of the attack, the rebellion of Korach. We're going to move forward just for a second to the beginning of Sefer Dvarim. And Parshas Dvarim, it refers to various places that Klal Yisrael rebelled against authority, against the authority of Moshe Rabbeinu, against the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And one of the places listed is Chatzeros, literally courtyards. Chatzeros is courtyards. And at the time of Chazal, the way that they used to build is they used to have private houses. And around a chatzar, around a courtyard, they would build a number of those private houses. And then they would have a number of chatzeros, a number of these courtyards built around a mavui, which is more of a common courtyard that was common to a number of these courtyards. And that's how they used to build. And then a number of those mavuos would open up to a reshus rabim, a public thoroughfare. So Chatzeros, getting back to Chatzeros, Rashi at the beginning of Sefer Devarim says Chatzeros was the location where Korach and his Eidah rebelled against Moshe, against Aaron, against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Now there's an interesting thing. When we want to carry on Shabbos, what we have to have in order to bond together houses and Chatzeros, we have to have an Eruv Chatzeros. There are actually different types. Is it an Eruv Chatzeros? Is it a Shitufei Mavuos? We won't go into the details of the different types, but the Eruv Chatzeros effectively binds together, unites separate people, separate personal property, separate real estate, separate homes, and it binds it together and makes an Eruv, makes them one. It brings unity. And that way you do that is you have common food. You have a kazayis of bread, and you join together, and effectively you have common ownership of that item, and via that we come together as if we're one person. And the concept here, and what it represents at least, is that we are joining together in the house together with a person who's been appointed to hold that Eruv, to hold that food that binds us together. And effectively, we are being mevatel. We are nullifying ourselves to that individual, that esteemed individual who is holding on to that Eruv and uniting us together. On the other hand, when we don't have that Eruv, when we don't have that bond, that unity together, and that nullification of ourselves to the individual who is holding on to that Eruv on our behalf, what we have is separateness. We have divisiveness. We have Chatzeros. We have our separate courtyards, our separate houses, and we don't have an Eruv. We don't have any bond. We have disunity. We have separation and not unity. And accordingly, it explains beautifully. There's a Gemara in Shabbos that it was Shlomo HaMelech, the brilliant Shlomo HaMelech, who instituted this concept of the Eruv. And at that time, when he said, we're going to have an Eruv, we're going to be able to bond together, a baskel, a heavenly voice came out and quoted a pasuk, Im Chacham Bini, Yismach Libi Gamani, Shlomo HaMelech, you are such a Chacham. I, says the Kodesh Baruch Hu, am delighted with this as well. And what's the Chachma here? The Chachma here of Shlomo HaMelech was the ability to bind people and to bond people and to unite people together, and that they are willing to subjugate themselves to a ruler, the king, And that is the amazing thing about an Eruv. And the lack of an Eruv is the exact opposite. And accordingly, that explains the Rashi in saying, why are you getting involved? Korach, your Eda, Mara, Lishtuso. Why are you getting involved in this foolishness? Foolishness is the opposite of Chachma. Chachma means unity. Foolishness, which represents Korach, means disunity. And accordingly, explains beautifully why the location of the rebellion of Korach and his Eidah was in Chatzeros. It was the lack of the Eruv, but it was separate Chatzeros, a separate division. Disunity was what was emblematic of this attack of Korach and his Eidah. So continuing, the next word goes as follows. Number two, there's a famous Mishnah in Avos that says that there are two types of machlokas. Machlokas debates. There's one that's Lashem Shamayim that has the proper intentions behind it, the proper motivations, the Shem Shemayim. They have good and proper intentions to get to the right result. They're having the desire to achieve what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us. And this is the machlokas of Shammai and Hillel. They weren't fighting just to fight. They didn't want disunity. They wanted emes. And accordingly, they were trying to achieve emes. There are times that Shammai, in the end of the day, agreed with Hillel, and Hillel agreed with Shammai, because that's what they wanted, emes. And that's a machlokas L'shem Shamayim. On the other hand, a machlokas that's not L'shem Shamayim. They don't have pure motives involved here. This is the machlokas of Korach and his Eidah. And what's interesting, the machlokas of Korach and his congregation, it should say Korach and Moshe, the fight between Korach and Moshe, or the fight of Korach and his assembly against Moshe. Moshe's not mentioned here. Why is that so? So one explanation would be because Moshe wasn't there to fight. They were initiating it, and he was being attacked. But there's another beautiful explanation, and it goes as follows. When you have a machlokas that's not L'shem Shamayim, that they don't have the right motives involved here, and you have a bunch of people getting together, and the only thing that's bonding them is negativity in having a common enemy. It's not that they have positive views together and that they share the same perspectives on things, but simply they are united because they are attacking a common enemy. That is a machlokas. You will have a machlokas between those people in of themselves because they do not have common interest. They have one single common goal of attacking somebody, but they are not in agreement on so many other things. And that's why it's called the machlokas of Korach and his Eidah, because even them, Korach and his assembly, they had their own personal interests. They had their own desires, own motivations that conflicted with those of everyone else. They were not united whatsoever. And that's why it's called the machlokas that is not L'shem Shamayim. That's the explanation of the Noam Elimelech. That's why it was the machlokas of Korach and the Eidah, because they themselves had plenty of machlokas, because they simply had a common enemy, but that was it. And what's very interesting, if we look in society, especially in the Middle East, that until very recently, we had all of the Arab states, and most of them nowadays still, and they were bonded together by a common enemy of Israel. It's not they have an agreement. We have the Sunnis and we have the this, and they have fights between them and different perspectives. They don't have the same interest. However, because they had a common enemy, that's what binded them together. Hopefully, as we see with the UAE and other states, that we have a thaw, a limited thaw at least, but hopefully that will continue. We see that common enemy oftentimes is not enough to keep a bond together, and hopefully we'll continue going in that direction. And number three, at the beginning of the parsha, we have a list of we have Korach and a few people that were supporting him, 250 people, but one that was listed is On ben Peles. And what's interesting is that On ben Peles is listed, he is mentioned at the beginning of the parsha, but then he kind of falls away. He's not mentioned there afterward. For example, when Korach and his Eidah, they're swallowed up, they're attacked, they're punished by a Kodesh Baruch Hu, On ben Peles is not mentioned. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin asks, where did he go? He was mentioned at the beginning, and then he wasn't punished, so where did On go? So the Gemara, very interesting, Gemara explains that his wife saved him. His wife was apparently very intelligent, and she said to him as follows, what are you getting involved with this? There's no nafkamina, there's no ramification for you whether Aharon wins or Korach wins. Either Aharon is going to be the Kohen Gadol or Korach is going to be the Kohen Gadol, but either way, You are not going to be the Kohen Gadol. You're always going to be somebody who's lower down on the totem pole. So why are you getting involved? So he responds as follows, what can I do? I committed to be in. I swore to them that I would fight on their side. So she needed to deal with it. He says, I made a kaya. I hear what you're saying, my dear wife, but I made a commitment, so I can't pull back now. So what she did is she gave him wine. She made him a bissel shikr. She made him a little bit drunk. And what she did was to make sure that nobody came in to wake him up and bring him out to the fight. She sat at the entrance of their tent with her hair uncovered. So without her hair covering, without her head covering. Then anyone who came by saw that and they said, we're out of here. They didn't bother. We're not getting involved in this. So the question that we have to answer is, why was that what she chose to fend them off, sitting there with her head uncovered, with her hair uncovered? What was the significance of that? So there's an interesting explanation by the Bris Shalom about this. So he says as follows. So at the time that On's wife said to him, what are you getting involved in this? You're never going to be the Kohen Gadol. On could have responded, I agree with you. I'm always going to be lower down. I'm going to be the Talmud. I'm not going to be the Rebbe. However, I still have to get involved because I need to do it for our children. Why for our children? Because if we dislodge the Kahuna Gadola, being the great coin from Aaron and his family, it'll be free game for other people. And despite the fact that I'm not going to be the Kohen Gadol, it could be that our children will be the Kohen Gadol. So I still have to fight for this. And accordingly, On Ben Pelet's wife uncovered her hair to ensure that it could never happen that their children can become the Kohen Gadol. What's the connection? Head covering, uncovering the head so they can't be the Kohen Gadol. So in fact, there's an amazing Gemara in Yoma that says that Kimches, a very special lady, she had a number of sons who were Kohanim Gadolim. Seven sons, each of them Kohen Gadol. So Chazal asked her, so how are you Zocha? When what merit do you have so many sons who are the Kohanim Gadolim? So she responded as follows, I never let the ceiling of my house see my hair. Even inside, I go around with my hair uncovered. So according to Kimchis, there's a special connection between the tznius of going even inside with the hair covered and having children, being zolcha to have children who are kohanim gadolim. Accordingly, the wife of On Ben Pelet specifically uncovered her hair to show, I'm doing the opposite. I'm making sure that my children will not be Kohanim Gadolim because I'm uncovering my hair. And accordingly, On Ben Pelet didn't have that argument and that my children could be. And in addition, when anyone came by and saw her with her hair uncovered, they immediately understood this is no longer a location for us to recruit someone, On Ben Pelet, to be the Kohen Gadol, to fight on our side. He is already seated defeat because his wife is sitting her here with her hair uncovered. We are now moving forward. We're in the second pasuk of the Parsha, and it says that all of these people that were fighting together, the assemblage of Korach, the people who ascended, were in fact leaders. They were dignified people, Nesiei Eida. They were leaders of the assembly. Kiriei Moed, we'll explain it as the English has it, those who were summoned for the meeting. And they were also Anshei Shem, men of esteem, men of renown. And the Zohar HaKadosh, what we're going to focus on now is what does that mean, Kriyei Moed? They were called to the those who were summoned for the meeting. But a Moed is a Chag, is a Yontif, called to be a Yontif. So the Zohar says as follows, that a Talmid Chacham is equated to Shabbos. In fact, the Talmud Chacham is called Shabbos. What does that mean? What does that Zohar mean? So the concept here is a Shabbos versus a Yontif. Shabbos is something that is intrinsically holy. Whether the Beis Din decides the date of it or not, whether we're there for it or not, Shabbos is coming, and Shabbos is holy. The tremendous Kedusha of Shabbos, the greatness of Shabbos, is intrinsic, the strength, the Kedusha of Shabbos. And accordingly, a Talmud Chacham is the same. Somebody who's genuinely a Talmud Chacham, he has to have internal Kedusha, internal greatness that comes from himself and emanates from himself, and not simply because people view him as a Talmud Chacham. It has to come from him. On the other hand, the Kedusha of a Yontif, which is a Moed, comes because Klal Yisrael, because the Sanhedrin Agado, the Beis Din Agado, says it's going to be on this day. They were Mekadesh, the Re'iyah, they decided when the new moon came up, and accordingly, based on that, they decide when the Yantif is going to be. So Yantif is not something that has intrinsic Kedusha, that's going to happen regardless, but it's because others call it Kadosh. The Sanhedrin says it's Yantif. And accordingly, what we see here is the Pasuk says they were the 250 people with Korach. They were Nesiyei Eda. Indeed, they were leaders of the assembly. But why was that? Not because they were like Shabbos, they were intrinsically holy, but because they were Kriyei Moed. Because they were viewed as holy, viewed as significant, viewed as leaders by other people. But they were not like Shabbos, intrinsically significant. It's only because they were viewed that way by other people. That's the explanation of the Imre Shefer. And now we're moving on to our fifth Dvar Torah. Fascinating Dvar Torah, and it goes like this. There's a Gemara in Nedarim that says that it's a time of Machlokas of Korach and his Eda against Moshe. The sun and the moon got involved. And they went up to the heavens, and they say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as follows, Ribono Shel Olam, either you find in favor of Ben Amram, you find in favor of Moshe Rabbeinu, and if you don't find in favor of him, we are stopping to shine. We're done. We're not going to be shining. We're not going to do our job anymore. So our question is, why are the sun and moon getting involved in this? What's their connection to what is going on? So the Me'or Hashem V'Shemesh says an unbelievable explanation. He says, if we go back to creation, what happened with the moon and the sun? Originally, they were the same size. And the moon complained. The moon complained and says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is not going to work. You can't have two kings that are working at the same time. You can't have two kings wearing the same crown. So what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? He said, moon, you're decreasing yourself. You're shrinking. The moon shrunk. So we see from this that HaKadosh Baruch Hu agreed with that fundamental claim of the moon and the sun, that you can't have two people leading. You can't have two leaders. You can't have two tzaddikim who are in charge. One has to be in charge and one has to be secondary. So that was HaKadosh Baruch Hu bought into that. Accordingly, he told the moon, you know, you got to shrink yourself. So now let's fast forward and we have the rebellion of Korach and his Eda. And what Korach is saying is, Kola Eda Kulam Kidoshi Moshe Aaron, you think you're so significant. You think you're special. You're the leaders. We're all significant. We could all fill that role. And in fact, we want your role. Kola Eda Kulam Kidoshi. We're all equal. We can all be kings. We can all be wearing that crown. And when the sun and the moon heard this, that's the claim they're making, that we're all equal, they say as follows, that's not how we've been living. We've been living under the assumption that you can't have two kings. You can't have two people of equal stature governing and ruling. That's why the moon is small. The sun is big. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you're not going to side in favor of Moshe, in favor of Aaron, that you need to be leaders, and all of these people are not Kulam Kedoshim, they're not equal, unless you come out and say that, we're not going to continue as we have been set up to be one bigger and one smaller. Im iyata osed din leben Amram, einanu me'irim fiu. Unless you find in favor of Moshe Rabbeinu, we're not going to be shining anymore, because we see then, if you're going to not make the decision here, we see that you're agreeing with Korach. Kulam Kedoshim. We're all holy. We can have significant leaders and all equal. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you disagreed with that back then at the time of creation, and you need to disagree with that right now. And accordingly, we got the answer. Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sided with Moshe, with Aaron. Aaron was the Kohen Gadol. And the sun and the moon, Baruch Hashem, have continued to shine, with really the sun being the king and the moon being reflective of the sun. Have a wonderful day. Thanks so much for listening.